Hi, everybody. This is Esoteric Astrology Adventure number 56. The last one, 55, we were moving along nicely, but we came to a point where the internet simply stopped. And so it became necessary to discontinue at about a half hour. We had reached page 128, and we were discussing the idea that Pluto never destroys the consciousness aspect. That in fact it destroys the impediments to consciousness rather than consciousness itself. So it acts as a very useful planet in the detachment of consciousness from the lower levels of preoccupation, freeing consciousness to enter higher vibratory levels. It is a non-sacred planet, but it is also in a way an esoteric planet. DK tells us it is closely related to Shambhala. And as I've said, the planetary logoi are great deities who are many, many Mahakalpas ahead of humanity in their evolution. And so non-sacred, sacred, or synthesizing planets can all act on all levels of the human energy system, whether the personal level, the soul level, or even the spirit level. We had reached the point when we were discussing, of course, I discussed it before during my silent film, in which a two-hour program had no audio. But we'll go over this again, the second time for me, the first time for you. Six planets, therefore, govern the mutable cross as far as humanity is concerned, and this in itself is significant. The mutable cross is a cross of great deities, lords of constellations. That cross and the other two crosses can all, of course, affect a planetary logos, a solar logos, or perhaps even still greater beings. Six planets, therefore, govern the mutable cross as far as humanity is concerned, and this in itself is significant. For six is the number of the great work of the period of manifestation. That period of manifestation is the descent of the monad and its pilgrimage through from the sixth level, counting from below upwards, through five worlds, Atma, Atmic, Buddhic, Manasic, Astral, and Etheric Physical Planes. So six is the number of form in a certain strong sense. The zero of spirit descends and finds itself immersed in the lower worlds and then reascends and finds itself as a nine. It is the number of the beast, which is the lower nature as far as man is concerned and is all that which seeks to destroy the higher life, but also that which can be controlled and directed finally by the soul. Well, every one of the planets has a threefold signature. The Earth, we are told, is a 777. This is very interesting in terms of the emphasis upon its material manifestation on the seventh or lowest plane. Mars, however, is 666. Venus is 555. This is the number of the beast, 666. That when the five and the six are put together, then the kingdom of God, which is the five, and the kingdom of the lower personality, which is the six, are united. The human and Deva aspects are united. The number 11 is created. 11, the sign of Aquarius, where a great fusion occurs. 11, the number of the initiate. So it's the number of the beast, which is the lower nature, the unregenerate, uncontrolled lower nature, as far as man is concerned. Every throne has for its legs the image of the beast or the dragon. We are built in our higher nature upon a very powerful, elemental, lower nature. And when this the forces of form, or the elemental life, or the irrational forces of nature are left to their own devices, they seek to destroy and overwhelm the higher life, and our task as man or manas is to learn how to control these lower forces, and we spend millions of years either victimized by them or eventually learning to control them in the later days. So this beast, which is a great power, just as Mars is a great power, can be controlled and can be directed by the will of the soul as the illumined mind begins to understand that. Therefore, the number five comes into power. If you think about it, the six can pretty much deal with the irrational, astral, and physical nature of the man. The five is the mind and can turn either way, down to serve the desire nature, or it can turn upward to serve the soul nature. Either way. And we are interested in the five that represents the kingdom of God, this above all. The significance of numbers enters into the science of esoteric astrology, and numerology, as it is per se, is a branch of esoteric astrology. It enters into the science of esoteric astrology and numerology, as it is per se a branch of esoteric astrology. The great science above all is the science of relations, and I think DK has something to say about that. Let's just see here. Science of relations. Yes, in a few places. The science of astrology is, in the last analysis, the science of relations. And there is consequently no use in avoiding the term, especially when there is no other which seems to meet the requirements as adequately. So we're talking about the word relation or relationship. The science of relations, yes. And finally, there are three references. The laws governing individual humanity and the kingdoms of nature are studied, and the whole science of relations, as it is unfolding in our evolving world, becomes the practical interest of the disciple. I can say that, you know, from my perspective, I consider both esoteric astrology and rheology to be aspects of the great science of relations, which takes all of the apparently distinct factors in the whole of creation and shows their archetypal pattern, their interrelationship with each other on an archetypal basis, an archetype being that which is found conceived in the mind of God. It is a purposeful divine ideation. So here we have the need to control the 666. That has been, you know, crudely materialized in some of the modern scriptures where there is no great understanding of the form in relation to the soul. But the beast, whether it is the planetary beast, sometimes called the planetary entity, or the human beast, which is the threefold form as it rejects, because it follows the lunar or first solar system tendency, it rejects the soul. That beast has to be controlled, that beast has to be directed by Vulcan, the spiritual will. So when you think about it, Vulcan is the will of the soul, and Vulcan kills Abel. Abel is the shepherd, Abel the sheep, the shepherd, the ram, connection with Aries and Mars, which is the elemental nature. So Vulcan eventually subdues Mars, and we are reaching a point in our development now when that can be the case. If you have, let's say, Sun oppose Mars, because Sun and Vulcan are very close, Sun square Mars, we have that conflict potential, at least, between the center of will and the center of rampant desire, which is Mars and relates to the lower chakras, in relation to which Mars has a triple rulership, both of the solar plexus, the sacral, and it's even found latently at the base of the spine, as the Tibetan tells us. So the Tibetan gives us six words here, which are meant to deal with six esoteric planetary rulers: love, mind, experience, form, human understanding, and death. Well, there's probably a one-to-one relationship. Remember the six rulers of Pisces. We are dealing with Pisces. Jupiter and Mercury are the orthodox rulers. And then we start with, let's say, Venus as the ruler of Gemini. The moon, veiling Vulcan and sometimes Neptune as the ruler of Virgo, the Earth the ruler of Sagittarius esoterically, and Pluto the esoteric ruler of Pisces. So we can assign these in various ways, but there's no cut and dried method to do this. We can say love is, I think what I'll do here is change the color. So love is, love is Jupiter. Okay, Jupiter. And mind should be considered as, it can be considered many things, Venus among them, but mind is certainly Mercury. Experience, the field of experience, as the Tibetan describes it, is Earth. And form is Vulcan, is the moon and Vulcan. We realize that when you compare the moon and Vulcan, the moon, as the sort of fifth non-sacred and lowest of the non-sacred planets, has most to do with the dense physical form. A Vulcan does affect the dense physical form, but it has a strong etheric impact. Of course, we should not eliminate the moon from an etheric connection, because we're told that the devas that constitute the four ethers with their shades of violet all have the moon upon their forehead. That tells us, of course, that devas have foreheads, and it tells us something about the devic form. But the moon then has an etheric connection as well, and is connected with violet, we are told, and violet is the color of these devas in various categories, purple, light purple, how's it go, violet, light violet, and lavender. So as far as human understanding goes, I think we want to look at the planet Venus, because Venus is a planet of loving understanding. Jupiter's as well. There's some places where, with these words, more than one planet could operate. And obviously, death is certainly Pluto. So there are the six esoteric rulers of the mutable cross. And he's talking. They're all rulers. They're the orthodox rulers and the esoteric rulers. Jupiter and Mercury, although very high planets, serve as exoteric rulers, and Earth and Moon, although non-sacred, and even Pluto non-sacred, serve as esoteric rulers. Maybe that tells us something about the mutable cross, that it is, in fact, the cross of evolution, the cross of many changes, and is not one of the highest crosses, because when you look in the esoteric positions on the other crosses, you're not finding so much the non-sacred planets. I guess Sun can be considered a non-sacred planet, but it's veiled by Neptune. And the Earth, Mars. Yes, Mars is a non-sacred planet, which is found as an esoteric ruler on the fixed cross. I guess on the cardinal cross, we don't find that. We find Mercury as the esoteric ruler of Aries, Neptune esoterically Cancer, Uranus esoterically Libra, and Saturn esoterically Capricorn. So there are no esoteric, in the esoteric positions for the cardinal cross, there are no non-sacred planets, whereas for both the mutable cross and the fixed cross, there are non-sacred planets in the esoteric position. But as I said, you know, these are great deities, and they can certainly function esoterically with respect to man, since there are so many Mahamanvantaras or Mahakalpas ahead of man in their development, which is not to say that they are not group entities. Indeed, I believe they are. Okay, these six qualities are the keynotes of the fourth creative hierarchy, the human kingdom. Very interesting that he is relating, let's get something I can work with here, that he is relating the relating humanity to the mutable cross. Mutable cross. The fourth creative hierarchy is the hierarchy of humanity, but as we realize, it does contain some other kingdoms, Matter of fact, it may contain them all, except for the kingdom of solar lives. But it certainly contains the kingdom of souls, the fifth, and the kingdom of planetary lives. Some of the Chohans are still members of the fourth grade of hierarchy. So these are the keynotes, love, mind, experience, form, human understanding, and death. And we can think of humanity's life and our own life in relation to these different qualities. Each one of them means something different depending upon the stage of evolution at which a man may find himself. For the undeveloped man, all of these things exist in some form or other, but very low in their expression compared to the highly developed man, and the man's attitude is very different towards them when he is highly developed. These are the keynotes of the fourth grade of hierarchy. The human kingdom, of course, the hierarchy is more than the kingdom, and they are embodied in the planetary influences which pour through these planets from their allied signs. Now, each planet has a number of allied signs, and we are talking about the allied signs which are found upon the mutable cross. So in this case, when it comes to Jupiter, and we're dealing with love, the allied signs are Sagittarius and Pisces. When it comes to mind, Mercury upon the mutable cross, the allied signs are Virgo and Gemini. When it comes to experience or Earth, the allied sign is Sagittarius. On the mutable cross, and actually Gemini hierarchically, but we won't consider that at the present time. When it comes to the moon, there's only one sign on the mutable cross, and that's Virgo. Vulcan is veiled in this particular case, but also Neptune, as we will learn later. When it comes to Venus, the only allied sign on the mutable cross is Gemini. When it comes to Pluto, the only allied sign on the mutable cross is Pisces. So basically, you know, what we're learning is that there are lords of planets and there are lords of constellations, and they have relationships to each other just the way, like, we might be related to a member of the animal kingdom, let us say, to a dog or a cat or some domesticated animal. Probably there's even a greater difference between the lord of a planet and the lord of a constellation, greater analogously than the difference between ourselves and a member of the animal kingdom. Sorry, I keep on doubling on my image there. So they are embodied planetary influences which pour through these planets from the signs. So this is very interesting that these qualities, love, mind, etc., are all coming from the signs, constellations themselves, and not just from the planets. So the signs are involved and not just the rulers of the signs. That's an important thing we might overlook if we were not careful in our study here. Through the activity of these forces, which work at this stage through the mutable cross, you know, they certainly can work on the two other crosses. In other words, if you look at these qualities, let's see, what does it say here? The activity of these forces, and let's call them in this case qualities. Let's see, you know, there are higher forms of love than will work on the mutable cross, higher forms of mind. Our experience on Earth changes entirely as we begin to negotiate the various planes. What is a form for us? Well, it can be a dense physical form, but it can also be one of the higher forms, let us say, the causal body. What is human understanding? Well, it becomes soul understanding. And what is death? Well, it's not just the death of the body as normally conceived on the mutable cross, but it's the obscuration of consciousness and the death to death itself upon the cardinal cross. So these qualities, let's see what we have here. Through the activity of these forces or qualities which work at this stage through the mutable cross, and they can work on the other crosses as well, as I've just pointed out, man is brought to a great crisis of polarization. It's a crisis of duality, and to a point of basic change for which all the earlier and many changes have prepared them. So we're talking about the mutable cross and the crisis of polarization which a man experiences just before he enters the fixed cross. This crisis of polarization is experienced before a man enters the fixed cross. Fixed cross. Okay, and it is a crisis in which that which is the personality and that which is the soul stand rather distinctly before the man. He knows the great duality of soul and personality. He knows the pairs of opposites. He knows the two directions, upward and downward, basically, in which these two poles are pulling or attracting. And he has to make a decision to, often it's under Libra, to throw the weight of his emphasis, his influence, his mental power, his will, upon the side of the soul magnetism. Crisis of polarization. You stand there, you realize you're at the crossroads, you could go one way or another. And this is orchestrated so that as a man is ready to take the first initiation or going towards that, these planets are active in that pre-period before the first initiation, and he is faced with the direction of the soul or the higher power or the direction, the ordinary direction of the personality, and he chooses to emphasize the soul even though he has great battles for still many lives with the personality. Okay, now moving onward. It is these words which, also which, from a different angle, govern the processes undergone upon the path of discipleship and probation. Well, okay, you know, we've been talking about love and mind, which is Jupiter and Mercury. Well, that's the love of form and the mind that negotiates in the lower three worlds. And you can even, as I've been saying, you can even look at these other words and say, well, an ordinary man can deal with them and can experience them. Well, certainly there is earthly experience. And there is the form, and man is constantly presented with the form and with issues related to form, and his consciousness is captivated by the form. There's human understanding, just understanding the way of humanity in ordinary life upon the dense physical plane, subject to states of vitality, to various emotional conditions, and to the development of the mind and the obscurations of the mind. Yes, the ordinary man experiences that, but what DK is trying to say, these words apply, and this I think is his main point, on the path of discipleship and on the path of probation. So we are looking for these words to operate in a manner higher than they did when applied to the fourth creative hierarchy in general. Okay. The thing about esoteric astrology is we have to learn all the various levels a human being can pass through, whether strictly physically polarized, emotionally polarized, lower mentally polarized, or whether he is becoming a personality who is beginning to aspire, or whether he is a true disciple responsive to the soul, or whether he is an initiate identified as the soul. Those six phases can be discussed, and you know, eventually man becomes the monad itself, expressing in the lower worlds. He already is that, but he knows it consciously and can wield monadic power. So we're looking for these planets and the signs connected with them, the allied signs, and we're looking for these words as they express on the path of discipleship and on the path of probation. So the task of the disciple, says the Tibetan, is to understand their significance in a practical and effective manner and to deal with the energies which these planets release. We are constantly living in a sea of energy. We cannot help but be subjected to them, but how do we handle them? That is the question. Things come along, things change. Do we recognize changes of energy, and can we handle them as a disciple? Well, DK tells us sometimes our vibration is a little lower than it should be, and I know we've all experienced that, and then we experience the release from that low vibration, and again the regrasping of soul control under the spiritual will and Vulcan. So we have to understand these words, love, mind, experience, form, human understanding, death, those are the words. We have to understand them as a probationary disciple would understand, and as a disciple would understand, and eventually when we're on the fixed cross and moving towards the cardinal cross, as an initiate would understand. And subordinating these energies, the energies released by the fixed cross, subordinating them, the energies of the immutable cross, to the energies released by the fixed cross upon which he stands, and thus increases their potency through occult combination. This is one of the most important sentences. I'm going to read it again so we can really concentrate upon it. The task of the disciple is to understand their significance, those planets, those words, those qualities, in a practical and effective manner, and to deal with the energies which these planets release, subordinating them to the energies released by the fixed cross upon which he stands, and thus increase their potency through occult combination. An astrologer has to learn the art of combination. How do you take various strands or spheres of energy, blend them so that they become sort of an energy molecule? Let's just say that water has the properties of both hydrogen and oxygen, but in combination it is something else than either hydrogen or oxygen. And thus it is for combinations of planetary influences, combinations of stellar influences. The astrologer is learning how to blend, mix, combine, so that the new combination bears the qualities of both the ingredients and yet produces perhaps something even different. So in that period when we are making that transition from the mutable cross to the fixed cross, we are engaged with the esoteric planets of the mutable cross, helping us make that transition onto the fifth cross, but we are also coming in touch with fixed cross energies, especially the esoteric rulers of the fixed cross. So we have a contrast here between the esoteric rulers of the mutable cross, with which we are engaged and which we are trying to deal with effectively, and the incoming esoteric rulers of the immutable cross. Now, everybody who is going to be a disciple here, beginning at the first initiation, true disciple, is going to have to deal with the Vulcan as the esoteric ruler of Taurus, which will give him the will to persist towards the greatest light, you know, and to use spiritual will rather than simply personal self-determination. It's the grip, the illuminating power of the soul to overcome the personality. We all have to deal with Vulcan strengthening our spiritual will. We will also have to deal with the sun veiling Neptune in Leo. And rather than simply looking at ourselves as an ahamkaric personal individual around which the world seems to revolve, we begin to feel the influence of the heart of the sun, and we feel that magnetic love relationship with others that binds us into soul union. We begin to feel genuine warmth of heart and the expansion of the Christ love in the heart, which is a Neptunian type of expression. It leads to the second initiation. When we go over to Scorpio, another fixed sign, we have Mars, and we're going to always fight the great battle. DK says, see that you battle. He was talking during the Second World War, but it's a general principle. See that you battle. It is a struggle, and the soul must prevail. So we are willing to fight with the Hydra and be noble and valorous in that particular cause, fight the good fight. We are not going to be supine, and we are not simply going to give in to our vices and not resist them. We are going to confront them, and that the confrontation of vice is one of the great powers of Mars. He who goes forth and will enter into battle for the Lord. It is thus for Aries, and even in a deeper sense with Scorpio, where the fight becomes a matter of life and death. And then we're also going to be subjected to the fixed cross energy of Jupiter in Aquarius, whereby we will learn the beauties of group love and group consciousness, and we will realize that the greatest way to grow is to grow together, because truly we are even more the group than we are the individual. So we expand our identity into that of the group. Our consciousness under Jupiter expands till we begin to merge in consciousness as if we were the group. And, you know, we can talk about that, but the question is, do we think individually, or is our identity extended so that whatever the group is more what we are than our apparently individual self? So there is the life more abundant that the Christ promised with Jupiter and Aquarius. Now all these fixed cross energies are going to start coming in. And they're going to come in while these other energies are operative, the energies of the mutable cross, even esoterically considered. So if the energies of the mutable cross are going to be subordinated to the energies of the fixed cross, we could begin combining them. And by combining these energies, we would enhance the energies of the mutable cross. Well, you know, let's take a look at that. How might that work? I wonder if I can, I wonder if I can do something a little different here. So, you know, let's say we have the energy of Venus. And so Venus will be a teaching on the late mutable cross, the presence of the soul, and one will feel soul attraction. But now, what would we have here if we had Venus subordinated to Vulcan? Which would be, we'll take the very first influence on the fixed cross, and we'll go through all of the influences on the mutable cross. So Vulcan is the spiritual will, Vulcan is the grip of the soul, Vulcan is the great light descending from the head center and merging with the light of Venus. We will have Moon subordinated to Vulcan. Well, that is, the Moon is the esoteric ruler of Virgo. We will have Earth subordinated to Vulcan. We will have Pluto subordinated to Vulcan. And then as we go on, you see, what I have over here is the, I'll try to make them a little bigger. That ought to help. That ought to help. Good. Okay, now we look at the next factor in the mutable cross. We'll have Venus subordinated to, I'm going to have to make this larger. Excuse me here. Okay, we have Venus subordinated to the Sun veiling Neptune. Okay, we have the Moon subordinated to the Sun veiling Neptune. Sun veiling Neptune. We have Earth subordinated to the Sun veiling Neptune. And we have Venus, Moon, and the Earth, and finally Pluto subordinated to the Sun veiling Neptune. So, you know, the powers that are already present in Venus, Moon, Earth, and Pluto should, by the power of combination, be elevated as they are exposed to these fixed cross energies. I might as well be complete about this, you know, because this is how we would have to test it out. We'd have to make combinations of all the four rulers of the mutable cross, esoterically considered, and then the rulers of the fixed cross, esoterically considered, and we'd look at the combinations. Now, I don't think I'm going to go through all these combinations, but at least I will list them. We have Venus next. Spell it. Venus subordinated to Mars. No, that's a real reversal, but we'll try to see how that might work. We have Venus. We have Moon subordinated to Mars. We have Earth subordinated to Mars. We have Pluto subordinated to Mars. And of course, that makes sense because, you know, Pluto, Mars is the alter ego of Pluto, and Pluto is, though an esoteric planet, or at least quite obscure in the way it works, it is of lesser development than Mars, just as the Earth is of lesser development than Venus. And finally, rounding this out, we would have Venus subordinated to Jupiter, the esoteric ruler of Aquarius. We would have Moon subordinated to Jupiter. We would have Earth subordinated to Jupiter. and we would have Pluto subordinated to Jupiter. Now, all of this has to be interpreted esoterically. These are 16 combinations of fixed cross planets and later mutable cross esoteric rulers, which are helping man make the transition onto the fixed cross of the soul. Venus and Vulcan, of course. Vulcan rules the head center for the disciple. Venus rules the ajna center, and we have the usual attractions of Venus and the power of the soul growing subjected to the spiritual will of Vulcan. So we are adding will to love. When the moon is subordinated to Vulcan, we are undergoing purification in Virgo, yes, but that is strengthened greatly by the spiritual will of Vulcan, its power, its gripping power, its endurance. The Earth is the etheric body, and Vulcan has great to do, much to do with the etheric body, and so we are able to willfully pursue our experience upon the sphere of the Earth and make it very purposeful. I'm just giving you, you know, some off-the-cuff kind of combinatory possibilities. We could meditate on these and generate quite a few. Pluto is very interesting because Pluto and Vulcan are both involved at the first initiation. Pluto is raising everything found in the depths to the heights, and Vulcan is plunging into the depths to activate Pluto. So, in a way, the death process or the elimination process is all being guided by the necessities of the spiritual will, of soul will. The soul is guiding the process of purgation, getting negativity out of the system, purification. And so it can be very drastic when these two are together, and very interestingly, these two are in combination before the first initiation. If we, you know, let's just say, you know, let's just do this. We go to page 70 in Esoteric Astrology, and you will see a familiar quotation, familiar to those who are poring over astrology. And it says that the first initiation, the disciple has to contend with the crystallizing and destroying forces of Vulcan and Pluto. Vulcan crystallizes prior to arranging a shattering, and Pluto is destroying and expiating, purgating, you know, eliminating, casting out, and so forth. The influence of Vulcan reaches to the very depths of his nature. This is the downward-pointing arrow that is sometimes used as the symbol of Vulcan. Whilst Pluto, the upward-pointing arrow, which DK does give us the symbol of Pluto, drags to the surface and destroys all that hinders in the lower region. So it's a roto-rooter effect, kind of a scouring of the aura. The two of them together, you see, we're talking about a period of time right before the first initiation, when the four planets of the immutable cross, esoterically considered, are helping with that transition, and the fixed cross planets are coming in. So that's quite a grip of Vulcan upon Pluto, directing the purgation process. Now, okay, now we move on, and we are dealing with Venus in Gemini, which is helping to build soul rapport, but in comes this very strong energy of Neptune, which is the higher octave of Venus, and the whole heart of the sun energy greatly strengthens a soul consciousness, soul awareness, and soul influence. So it's like two similarly qualified planets being added to each other, Neptune being the higher octave, and the heart is swelling here, relating to the ajna center. So it's a very good opportunity to relate heart, solar plexus, and ajna center, as we do find in esoteric, in Discipleship in the New Age, Volume 2, in the second initiation that DK gave, second group initiation. Now here is the moon. You know, normally the moon is beginning the purificatory process under Vulcan, and even Neptune, and now when we add the fixed cross Neptune, that Neptune is stimulated, so the stimulation of the Christ within the heart, rising above and subordinating the responses of form, is highly stimulated. begins to overpower the normal material processes. We have Earth again, the field of experience, as DK describes it, also the etheric body. We have the etheric body infused by the energies of the heart of the sun. So the etheric body can carry any energies, we realize that, and it's the energies of the heart of the sun, or the energies of the love petals, the Buddhic energy of the soul, which begins to be carried by the etheric body, and love is expressed upon the field of experience increasingly, rather than a strictly material response. Okay, then we move on to Pluto. It's going to be subordinated to fixed cross Neptune. Pluto is purifying. Pluto is bringing about a type of death. We are dying to our attachment to the lower type of strictly physical plane experiences, and Neptune, which is veiled by the sun, is presenting us with more subjective experiences. So we die to one and enter another. The obscuration fades away, and the soul, the sense of soul presence, fades in. Now we will look at something a little stranger. Usually it's Mars that is supposed to be subordinated to Venus rather than Venus to Mars. So how will we interpret this? Because Mars is the personality, elemental as a whole in all the three vehicles, and Venus is uniquely the planet of the soul, at least for us. So, but we have the warrior Mars, and this is Mars in relation to Scorpio, fixed cross Scorpio, and Venus is bringing about that increasing soul rapport so that there's more magnetism in the late mutable cross, more magnetism toward the soul and from the soul, and we are now willing to fight the battle to increase that magnetism and to confront the obstacles which may prevent the growth of soul awareness. So Mars is again really serving Venus, but it's willing to enter into battle on behalf of the soul so that soul personality rapport can increase. Moon and Mars are interesting together because they do rule the lunar lords. If you look here, I probably should have more than... Yeah, they rule the lunar lords. If you take a look here, manifested hierarchy number 6, the lunar lords. The planet is Mars, but they are lunar, so the moon is involved there as well. So we have a Mars and moon subordination. Interestingly, Mars and the moon, we have seen, is very active at the third initiation. At the third initiation, the moon veiling a hidden planet and Mars bring about a fearful conflict. Well, it's probably the moon veiling Vulcan plus Mars bringing about a fearful conflict. But at the end, the man is released from personality control. So Moon and Mars are really active at all the initiations, 1, 2, and 3 particularly, but the DK singles out the third. And the Moon will begin the purificatory process, bringing out more light and matter through veiled Vulcan and bringing out the impulses of the Christ force. But Mars will energize that purification process and make of it a true battle. It adds will, determination, idealism to the ordinary purification process which the moon in Virgo represents, and it becomes a matter of great importance to bring the lunar nature into a fit form. So one applies his full effort and strength and directed power of Mars to increase the intensity of the purificatory process. We look at Earth, the field of experience, and Mars is willing to engage in battle the negative experiences which a person always will encounter. The Earth is the etheric body as well, and Mars will fight for the dominance of the higher type of etheric patterns over the lower pulls. Mars and Pluto are together, Mars being the higher octave or the alter ego of Pluto, and this is a great intensification of the battle. Pluto is providing a release, and Mars a release from the ordinary common cross experiences, and Mars creates tremendous aspiration towards the soul. So it's not only a question of plutonic release, but the upward force of Pluto is driven by the aspiring force of Mars, and a person is determined, no matter what may be the personal cost, to reach the higher realms. You know, I said I wasn't going to do this, but here I'm doing it. Well, I'm talking about the power of combination. Now, you know, any one of us could create these combinations according to how our mind reveals their nature. But I must say that that is one of the most important things to do, to create, to develop the ability to combine different qualities, notes, patterns, colors, and seeing what the third factor will be. Or you may be combining three or even four on a cross, or three on a T-cross. And we have to get a sense of how these different qualities and energies work together, just like we would with two people. You know, two people have a relationship, okay, the relationship is more than what either one of them is. Now three get together and the relationship complexifies. And whatever is produced when three get together is different from what any one of them is or what any two of them are in combination. Then you get four getting together. Finally, that's the synthetic aspect of the cross. And what will be that particular relationship? What will the foursome really mean? So you can understand that the mind must be articulate, it must be analytical, and yet it must be fluid enough to combine things and see what emerges from the combination. When astrologers go through their tables of aspects, that's really what they're doing. They're telling you, well, what do these two planets do when they relate to each other, and then you apply it to yourself. And usually in relation to a third or fourth factor, because each planet is in a particular sign, and the signs, the influence of the signs, have to be combined as well. So that's what so many of our cookbook astrologies, astrological tables give us, how to read these combinations. All right, now we've got Jupiter, which is bringing life more abundant in Aquarius. Venus is on the late mutable cross, bringing about the soul personality union, drawing the two together magnetically and in the bonds of love. And Jupiter reveals the group nature of the soul and inclines the individual who is becoming increasingly soul conscious to put all of those soul abilities at the disposal of the group into which his consciousness is expanding. So let's just say that the establishment of causal consciousness is facilitated when fixed cross Jupiter dominates Venus, which is subordinate, becoming subordinate to it. Now, we could have other instances in which Venus would be the major factor and Jupiter would be subordinate. But always try to remember to hierarchicalize your analysis. There's always something first, second, third, fourth, whichever way you want to count. There's always something closer to the peak of the pyramid and something lower down on the pyramid, and we have to retain that sense of status, hierarchical status. This does not suggest that all things are not equal. All things are equal. You know, in spirit, all things are equal. There is only one spirit, and all units of life are that spirit, and from the spirit essence, they are utterly equal, but they're not equal in manifestation. In manifestation, we have a hierarchicalization. And we have to maintain that, otherwise we're just mixing things on the same level instead of mixing things on a prioritized scheme, within a prioritized scheme. Okay, so the moon will be subordinated to Jupiter. Interestingly, Jupiter and the moon, oftentimes together they represent the ancestral gods. They're both related to Cancer and to the past in a certain respect, moon being the ruler of Cancer, Jupiter being the exalted planet in Cancer. So in the secret doctrine, the two of them together are fighting against Venus that wants to raise the consciousness up into the world of the soul towards Sanat Kumara. But Jupiter and Venus, Jupiter and the moon want to worship the ancestral gods, but not in this case. The moon is facilitating a purification, but Jupiter hints at the full birth of the Christ and the glory of the Christ life, because Jupiter is the is the hierarchical ruler of Virgo. So we have the moon in Virgo facilitating this preparation of the form, and Jupiter is expanding the soul consciousness so we know why the form is being prepared. Jupiter is expanding the consciousness as the form is purified, because we all know when we have a purified form, we become more conscious than when our form is clogged and subjected to the lower energies. Jupiter. Okay, now we have Earth, the field of experience in relation to Sagittarius on the late mutable cross, subordinated to fixed cross Jupiter. And here we have the growth of, very interestingly, we're looking at Jupiter and the Earth. They both have the second ray in their soul nature. Earth, second ray soul, the logos of Earth, and Jupiter, second ray soul. They may as well share a monadic ray in common. The Earth's monadic ray is first ray, and Jupiter's may be seventh ray slash first ray. He is, after all, the king of the gods. But that is simply speculation. So we have the widened experience, the growth of consciousness. Wherever Jupiter is present, there's always a growth or expansion of consciousness, the pushing back of horizons. So here on Earth, we're on that field of experience, and our experience is growing under Sagittarius. We're seeing more and more until we begin to realize when Jupiter is bringing in those Aquarian energies, which it does on the fixed cross, that it's all one being, it's all one relationship. That this expanded sphere of experience is all one experience, and one identity is having it. So the sense of the wholeness of Earth experience is increased. Pluto subordinated to Jupiter. Okay. Well, here we are. These are two rulers of Pisces. We've been talking about them. And again, the purpose of Pluto is to kill the obscurations to consciousness, and the purpose of Jupiter is to expand that consciousness. So here we see that whatever is killed, gotten out of the way, eliminated, leads to a new vision. And vision is one of many entities participating in the group process. Pluto is killing the ahamkara. You know, we all are sort of born with the sense that I'm the center of the world, and that intensifies, and we're out of relationship with all things, and we are the most important focus within our field of consciousness, and Pluto starts to kill that, and Jupiter shows, well, look, this little identity that you used to focus so much upon is just part of a much larger group. The group sense can expand the family, the community, the nation, humanity itself, and beyond and beyond. But Jupiter is always widening the ring pass knot when new vision is accorded by the destruction which Pluto has inflicted upon the Ahamkara principle. All right, so this gives you an idea of how to combine these energies. The power of combination. Let's read again what DK said here as we've gone through it. The task of the disciple is to understand their significance, the significance of the words and the forces and the six rulers of the mutable cross, in a practical and effective manner. Because we can't just deal with abstractions, we have to really apply them. And to deal with the energies which these planets release, you know, via their alliance with the signs, subordinating them to the energies released by the fixed cross upon which he stands. Subordinating them to the energies released by the fixed cross upon which he stands as he becomes a disciple of first degree initiate and so forth, and thus increase their potency, the potency of the rulers of the mutable cross, esoterically, thus increase their potency through occult combination. Now, there's another way we can look at making that transition from the mutable cross onto the fixed cross. We can look at each one of these planets, the esoteric rulers, and we can give them sort of fixed cross meanings. We can look at Venus, and we can say, okay, how would Venus differ if it was operating on the fixed cross than how it operates on the mutable cross, even esoterically? And let's just say the soul would come into much greater prominence, and the soul light and love would become a dominating factor. Whereas the moon begins the process of purification, and is really veiling Vulcan and Neptune, there would be an intensification and an impersonalization of those energies if they were truly related to the fixed cross, the cross of the soul. So the spiritual will would grow, the Christ force under Neptune would grow. What is incipient in the mutable cross, what is beginning in the mutable cross, will intensify. When it comes to the earth, in relation to the field of experience and enlarging that experience on the late mutable cross, we would have a real regeneration of the etheric body on the fixed cross, and the earth would become a sacred field of experience. So, you know, you can take a look at any planetary energy and say, how would it operate at the mutable level, cross level of consciousness, how at the fixed cross level, how at the cardinal cross level of consciousness. They all can operate in these different levels because the planets themselves can relate to the very highest aspects of the human being, to the triad, to the monad. Almost all of them probably can. Probably all of them can, in fact. So you have to sort of stratify your interpretation. So it is, he says, it is by achieving intelligent and active response to the energies released and earlier mastered through the experience of the mutable cross, they're mastered at a certain mutable cross level, and by relating them to the potencies let loose upon him whilst crucified upon the fixed cross, that he learns to prepare himself for the 12 great tests in all the 12 signs. Now, for which the experience of the two crosses prepare him. So, you know, DK is almost hinting, but he almost says here that these 12 great tests would occur upon the cardinal cross, but that's not exactly the case. He seems to be saying, seems to be saying that the 12 great tests are cardinal. But I don't think that's the case. It's just at the later stages of the fixed cross is when the great tests occur. Perhaps not the ultimate test of Aquarius or of Pisces, where we're taking the fourth initiation. But let's just say that we have to take what we have mastered and spiral it up as we subordinate it to the greater potencies of the fixed cross. We take what we have mastered upon the mutable cross, or that with which we are very familiar, and we subordinate it to fixed cross energy. So you can see how much the power of combination is required as we begin to work with transitions from the mutable cross to the fixed cross, and later from the fixed cross down off the fixed cross and towards the cardinal cross. We don't go directly, interestingly enough, we don't go directly from the fixed cross of the soul straight to the cardinal cross. We have to go through that incredible great renunciation of fourth initiation experience, where we really learn to stand on our own without the guidance of the soul or angel anymore. We have incorporated a great deal of the soul or angel. We learn thus to stand. We have risen to the feet of the soul or angel. The soul or angel is liberated. And when we have shown we can withstand that no man's land of the fourth initiation, then we are allowed to mount the true cardinal cross of the heavens. So we'll just read this one more time, and then I think, you know, we are reaching the end of the, it was Esoteric Astrology Adventure 55, but it is now 56 due to various little mishaps, and hopefully those mishaps are not operative on this recording. At least it seems as if they are not. Okay, we certainly hope so. All right, so it is achieved. Just finishing this, we're increasing the potency of the mutable cross planets, helping us make the transition onto the fifth cross. We're increasing their potency through occult combination. They have a certain tendency, and that tendency is enhanced when coming into combination with the fixed cross planets. The mutable cross planets Their potency is enhanced by coming into combination with the fixed cross planets. It is by achieving intelligent and active response to the energies released and earlier mastered, relatively mastered. I mean, let's just say that the full panoply of a planetary possibility is not mastered yet, but at least mastered with respect to a mutable cross experience, normal human experience. The energies released and earlier mastered through the experience of the mutable cross, and by relating them to the potencies let loose upon him, sounds like a rather drastic process. While crucified upon the fixed cross, we can't get off it until we are truly and actively identified as soul, that he learns to prepare himself for the 12 great tests, the labors of Hercules, and all the 12 signs. Now, we don't necessarily have to follow a cult rumor here, as DK says, and think that each one of these tests is sequential. We go from Aries to Taurus to Gemini and so forth. There are ways of passing these 12 tests in less than 12 lives, I do believe. And if we look at a potency of the rising sign and the potency of the sun sign, it is possible to take two tests in one incarnation, and even a combination of tests if there are various stelliums and ruling planets. So suffice it to say, we will be tested out under 12 streams of influence, but I doubt that it will have to be 12 sequential lives, or even 12 lives per se, because it really is possible to I don't think this full testing can occur until the second initiation begins, and it's certainly possible to achieve mastership from the stage of the second initiation in far less than 12 lives. So the kinds of combinations we are given, look at your sun sign, look at your rising sign, and think of the particular labor of Hercules or labors of Hercules through which you are passing under the influence and dominance of those two signs. I mean, I can certainly think in my own life, what it may be. I have Aries Sun, the man-eating mares mastering the mental forces to a certain extent, and also Cancer Rising, chasing the golden doe of intuition and always trying to grasp it and finding it. It has returned to the temple, and it really belongs to everybody, but following out the intuition. Those particular tests I find active in my life at this time. Am I passing them? I don't know. But suffice it to say, we can apply our spiritual will in such a way that whatever astrological potencies we are presented with at a certain time, later in our development, we can use these to help us pass the 12 great tests. However it happens, we have to master the lessons of all 12 signs. And that can occur in different combinations. Okay, we have, we've gone over. We will now together do the great invocation, even though we're just a little over time. And then move on to Esoteric Astrology Adventure number 57, hoping that this one came out in audio in every way in the correct manner. Om. From the point of light within the mind of God, let light stream forth into the minds of men. Let light descend on earth. From the point of love within the heart of God, let love stream forth into the hearts of men. May Christ return to earth. From the center where the will of God is known, let purpose guide the little wills of men, the purpose which the masters know and serve. From the center which we call the race of men, let the plan of love and light work out, and may it seal the door where evil dwells. Let light and love and power restore the plan on earth. friends, we have gone to the end of page, or at least we have reached page 129. And so number 20, Esoteric Astrology Adventure 57, will begin. So, until that time, thank you for listening, thank you for studying. I know that a lot is said in rapid order, but you know, it's even possible to slow down the speech. I think it's possible sometimes to play these things back at a slower speed, and therefore it might be more assimilable. Hopefully I'm speaking in a language which can be assimilated, and you'll get used to it. Okay, thank you very much, and we will talk to you soon. Bye-bye.